Hello and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Hello. How has your week been?
It's not been one of my bear weeks, I'll be honest.
Hasn't it? Why? What's been going on?
No, do you remember the old breakfast mobile or whatever we used to call it?
Well, your old shit heap of a car. It's still going.
It's still going, amazingly.
I mean, it's been written off about four times.
It has, yeah.
Between us, we've got cars. I mean, my car is now 22 years old and it's pretty much held together with gaffer tape in places. Literally, yep. Well, there's a bit of light that he's held on with a bit of gaffer tape now. And your car, I don't know how old your car is.
I don't know.
But anyway, it causes you a lot of hassle. So what's been going on?
Isn't there something that you can work out how old it is by the plates?
I think what's yours? Is it B?
Oh, I thought it was the number that was important.
Oh, it might be. Mine's so old that it's the letter.
I don't know. The number is 10 anyway, so I don't know.
Oh, maybe it's 2010 then, your car. It might only be 11 years old.
So that's not that old.
It's just not that old, is it?
No, it's just been nothing but trouble.
But these days, they just always want you to update your car and go electric, which makes perfect sense for the environment, and I'm all for that. But I can't afford an electric car at the moment. And I think I might have mentioned this before, but my local council have been looking at charging residents for parking.
Oh.
And because my car is of a certain age, they have deemed that they would charge me the full whack because of the environmental impact my car has. And when I wrote to the council about all this, I said, it really makes no odds when you're charging for parking, because my car is not emitting anything at that point.
That's a very good point.
And also, why are you essentially punishing people for having an old car? They've probably got an old car because they can't afford a new car. And the response I got from them was, well, it's all about informing your next choice. And I said, but my next choice would probably be an electric car, but I won't be able to afford one because I'm going to spend all my money paying for parking this.
That's a brilliant response.
But this was Croydon Council, who have now gone bankrupt. And I think since they've gone bankrupt, the new administration or the new people who have come in might be relooking at these plans. Because as I said to them in my response, this seems to me like a money-making scheme and not for the environment at all.
Well, if they've gone bankrupt, I think they need to take that and look at it as information on how to go forward and inform their next decision. Of how to swindle the people of Croydon.
Anyway, so your old banger.
Yes, I've had lots of problems with it this week. I was driving home the other day, just from the supermarket. It wasn't a long journey or anything like that. And I heard an almighty clang.
Ooh. And it's never good when you hear a noise when you're driving, is it?
No, and I thought, something has just fallen off my car. So I thought, oh, shit.
Did you look in the rearview mirror to see anything lying in the road?
Fortunately, I was so close to home that I was able to park it up and then get out and then walk back to where it happened. And sure enough, I found a big sort of circular disc thing in the middle of the road. And I thought, shit.
Is this a brake disc?
That was what I thought. But this thing was rusty as hell. And I thought, my car has, you know, in the last 3 to 4 months passed an MOT. Nobody mentioned these brake discs, and nobody would have passed an MOT with a brake disc with this level of rust. And I'm not sure that's a brake disc. So basically, I had this humiliating experience where I had to take a picture of this chunk of metal lying in the middle of the road. And then I had to get in contact with my guy who did my MOT and just said, you know, you did my MOT a while ago. I find it odd if you miss this. And P.S., what is it? So I had to send him a picture of it. And he got back to me and said, oh, yeah, that's a back plate.
Oh, I know what a back plate is.
I didn't.
I've had to replace mine twice.
It's something that sits there to collect shit. Is that right?
Yeah, well, it's to do with the exhaust, isn't it?
I have no idea. To this day.
Well, I know what it is, I'm not entirely sure. I do. I think it's something to do with the exhaust. Oh, so you know, we were talking a couple of weeks ago about things you should know.
Yes.
Shouldn't we all know what a back box is?
A back plate.
Oh, back plate. Oh, it's the back box I had to replace. Also, the back plate is something
very
different.
Well, it's nice that, you know, you're showing up how little knowledge you have as well.
No idea. I'm looking it up now, mate. I'm looking up back plate. Just so I know what we're talking about.
Okay.
Just so I've got. Whereabouts on the car does this go?
I've no idea.
Oh, so you haven't. It hasn't piqued your interest enough for you to actually find out where this thing sits.
No, I've got absolutely no clue, no idea, and I really couldn't care less. So basically, what I did was I then agreed with the guy to bring it down and have a look. And he said, yeah, it's harmless. The car isn't, you know, unsuitable. It's not dangerous. It's fine. But bring it down anyway, because I want to make sure that no other chunks of this bit have fallen and landed in bits they shouldn't be in, which will cause you future problems. Just for your own safety, bring it down.
Right, okay.
And I sort of said, because I'm thinking, right, ka-ching. I'm thinking, right, okay, well, how much is this going to cost? And he said, oh, I'm not worried about that. Just bring it down. We'll have a look.
He's worrying about your safety. He's worrying about your welfare, which is nice to hear.
I didn't say this to him, but I thought, but it's very sweet that you're not worried about that, but I am. So, but anyway, I took it down like a good boy, as I was told, and he got it up on the ramp, and he had a look underneath, and he said, your car's fine. Nothing's fallen off your car.
Nothing's fallen off your car.
I said, so what on earth has happened? He said, what you've done is...
You've picked someone else's back plate up.
You've driven over someone else's bit of metal in the road. It's jumped up and kicked the underside of your car, making it sound like and feel like something's fallen off yours. And then I just had this humiliating experience where I had to be sort of lectured and schooled on how cars work and what I should and shouldn't be doing for 5 minutes from this guy who then
what was he telling you?
Just about, you know, what a back plate is and...
I've just asked you that and you don't know. I mean, we're not listening.
No.
I can't believe he's actually taken his time to explain to you what this thing is and you've just got, I'm not interested. I'm just going to zone out until your mouth stops moving and then I'll piss off.
And then it came to the awkward moment where he gave him the keys back. And he just said, all right, there you go, mate. And I said, oh, well, how much do I owe you?
Yeah.
And he said, oh, nothing. Don't worry about it. It was 2 minutes.
Top man.
Well, yes, it's very sweet of him, but it made me feel like such a redundant creature that other men are taking pity on me, that they just the poor soul doesn't know what he's doing. Just let him go.
Well, even worse than that, he's taken his time out for free now. We've established for free to explain to you what, and even then it can't be interesting. You can't even absorb the kindness that's being offered to you. You are looking the gift horse in the mouth.
Yeah, I know. And then it gets worse still, because as he hands me the keys back and I'm on my way out, he says,
just crash into the side of his garage or something.
No, he said, you will need that clutch doing obviously at some point, won't you?
Oh, wow. Oh, hang on. This is clever. He's done this for fuck all. But he's basically going, that clutch needs doing. I'm sure the clutch needed doing when I was being driven by you in that car.
Same clutch. And I basically said, will it? And he said, well, yeah, obviously you can feel it slipping, right? And I just went, yeah. And I just drove away because I thought...
In first gear the whole way.
I don't know what a slipping clutch feels like. The car moves when I want it to. I don't know. So then, as if that wasn't bad enough, I finally got it back home. And I thought, right, good. The car isn't damaged. What a let off. I've been given some good karma, even if I've been slightly emasculated in the process.
Well, it's not really great karma, because the clutch is going to cost you a fucking fortune.
I know. The moment that clutch dies, so will the car. I'll push it off a cliff, I swear. And then about a day later, I reversed it into an Iceland van.
Oh, what? You reversed it into an Iceland van? They are big and quite red.
Well, to my credit, I was reversing, doing a U-turn, and he came round the corner a little bit sharpish.
But were you reversing round the corner?
No, I wasn't. I was reversing within my road.
Okay.
But it was near the beginning of the junction, and he just sort of came herring in as I was turning. I'm not sure who was to blame. I think it was probably...
50-50 by the sound of it.
Yeah, it's a hard call, that one. But so I slammed it into that. That gave me a big dent. So I was back down to the garage to see the same man who had emasculated me a day before. I said, is this legal to drive with this big pointy bit sticking out? And you know what he did?
What?
He just walked up to it, and like a proper man, he just slapped it back in.
Nice.
One slap, bosh, back in. He goes, there you are, mate. And again, no charge.
No charge.
On your way, you useless cretin.
Oh, yeah. The sympathy levels he's got for you are incredible. He's just like, he can't even believe the level of ignorance that he's seeing.
And then, I mean, that's it for incidents with the car. But then when I wasn't even in the car, the mere conversation of cars came up at work. And I managed to humiliate myself for a final time this week.
I mean, how? Because the vocab you must have picked up in the last few weeks should sure. Because I find, I know nothing about cars, but if you just throw a few key words in, you can normally get by.
Well, no, it was actually a bit worse than that. It wasn't to do with cars per se. It was to do with personalised number plates.
Right.
Now, you know how I feel about this.
Yeah, anyone who has one of them, problem people. Problem people in my mind. Twats. So, they're the sort of people you want to be reversing into, mate. Not an Iceland van.
The Iceland guy was very nice about it.
Did they have personal? You know, like Pimlico plumbers, they all have personalised weird sort of number plates. Do Iceland have that? They should do. They should have like chicken drumsticks.
That would be good. So basically, the conversation came up at work because basically someone had a van with three letters on the plate which resembled their name. So they said, oh, I should have that van because the letters on it, look. And then they turned to me and there was another woman standing there with us. And he said, oh, Ben, what do you think of personalised licence plates? And I said, if you've got them, I think you're a bit of a dick.
Perfectly reasonable response.
I didn't go hell for leather. I just went, a bit of a dick.
Yeah.
And at which point, this woman who we were standing with turns to me and says, oh, well, my husband's got a personalised license plate. So she didn't have to mention that. She could have kept quiet.
Yeah.
But she's now ramped the conversation level up to awkward.
The perfect response to that. But I'm hoping the next response from you is, well then, he's a bit of a dick.
Word for word, what I said. I thought, right, well, this is your own fault. I can't climb down now.
No.
So I turned to her and said, well, he's a bit of a dick.
Oh, this, well, how's this escalating now?
She thought about it for a while. And I think after a little summation in her head, she concluded that, yes, he probably was a bit of a dick.
Man, I think, personalised number plates, I don't see the point. I mean, some of them cost a fortune as well, don't they? Why would you waste money just to look like a cock?
Well, obviously, I can't tell you the licence plate of this of this colleague of mine, but she told me about it, and it just made no sense. It was just gibberish, and from the sounds of it, you'd barely even realise it was a personalised licence plate, and he'd spent £800 on it.
800, I mean, that's a holiday, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a decent holiday. No one gives a shit about your number plate. Anyone who sees that, or 95% of the people who see that, even if they can work out that the 5 is meant to be an S or a fucking Z or whatever shit you're trying to say, they're looking at it thinking, yeah, bit of a dick. The thing about when you talk about cars with people, because I don't, I'm not a petrol head at all, right? I'm not really that interested in cars. I don't see the point, and I don't get excited by seeing a posh car or a sports car. I'm just not one of those people. So when I end up, have you ever found yourself caught up with someone who really is into that?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
Oh my God, I don't know what to say. And it's often at like some sort of party or something, and you get talking to someone and they're going, oh yeah, well, I couldn't even tell you. I wouldn't know what model they're talking about, but they'll mention all the model number as if I give a shit. I don't care what you've got. Again, like if you've got, I remember being in Croydon once, in the middle of Croydon, and this penis in a lump of metal is how I would describe him, was driving around in some sort of sports car. It was so offensive on so many levels. The noise he was making, like it's almost, you want people to look at you. Fuck off. Not interested at you at all. The women that you think are going to be attracted to this aren't. If you're in Croydon and you want to attract a woman, a Skoda will do.
If it's not on fire, it'll do.
You don't need a Lamborghini or anything like that. And he probably had a personalised number plate. The whole thing was just, I just wanted him to crap it around a fucking lamppost, survive, but have a good sort of dose of karma.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I used to work with someone who was really into his cars, and he just sort of wouldn't accept that I had none. And he would continuously try and talk to me about them, to the point where he would think, God knows if he was right or not, I don't know, but he would claim, like, he could hear engines of cars and know without looking out the window what it was. Like, oh, there goes the Audi TT. And I thought, you boring bastard.
Fair play, right? Anyone can have a hobby. If that's your bag, that's fine. But find people who have the same interest. Don't tell me what engine it is. I couldn't give a flying fuck what engine it is. My question to you when I get into a car, or if I'm thinking about anything to do with a car, is, will this get me successfully from A to B without it stopping, bits falling off, or me dying? If the answer to all of those questions are yes, fine, I'll get in and we're done. I don't care.
It's amazing I got you in my car so often then.
Now, I want to say hello to a regular listener to the podcast called Paul. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Paul.
Thanks very much for listening, and thanks very much for getting in touch this week. Because on last week's podcast, we ended up having a brief conversation about the origin of the saying, how's tricks?
Yes, we did.
So he sent a message to say, hello, boys, how about looking into the origin of some of these sayings? So I thought this could be quite an interesting thing, because we're going to learn something here, which is going to be fascinating. And some of these are a little bit odd. So I know you've got a couple and I got a couple. I'll tell you, the first one he sent was mad as a hatter. So do you know where the phrase mad as a hatter comes from?
I have a funny feeling I do, but I might be wrong.
Okay, go on. So where do you think it comes from?
Is it something to do with when top hats were produced, they were finished with a certain, I don't know, substance for shine or something, and that was highly toxic, and it would cause people to, I don't want to say become insane, that sounds a bit much, but, you know, the fumes would get to their brains, essentially.
Yeah, well, no, you're absolutely right. I thought you were going to go down the misconception route that it comes from Alice in Wonderland and the Mad Hatter.
No.
But you're absolutely right. So the origin of this comes from the 17th century in France, where poisoning occurred amongst hat makers because they used mercury for the hat felt.
Okay.
So mercury is not good for the human body. So it was known as Mad Hatter disease, which was essentially kind of madness. And it was marked by tremors and irritability, shyness, sometimes kind of hallucinations at times, all because you're making a hat. I mean, it's just,
did you say shyness?
Shyness is one of the symptoms, apparently.
I'm not sure shyness should be considered a mental condition.
Well, I'm just reading you what it says here.
All right,
just reading what it says. Shyness, irritability, tremors, hallucinations sometimes. I mean, you're right, shyness shouldn't really, but perhaps in the 17th century it would have been.
Maybe.
When that was, when these symptoms were being observed, and they were just, oh, that's Mad Hatter disease. Extraordinary. Extraordinary. I mean, what I'd hope is that the shyness would be remedied by them wearing a big hat.
Right.
That would be the way they'd get around it. Like a big top hat, but comes down right over your face with a couple of eyes cut out.
Although that would be so striking that would probably get them unwanted attention.
Yeah.
I mean, after the hat.
They're already being seen as mad anyway. So you might as well go the whole hog. Right, the next one I've got here is barking up the wrong tree.
I've got no idea where that came from, actually.
So obviously means to have sort of misguided thoughts about something. You're barking up the wrong tree.
Yeah.
Apparently
it was an idea. But
go on then. What's your thoughts on it?
I kind of assume it's to do with, no, the logic doesn't work, but I can kind of assume it's to do with one, you know, dog challenging another dog, and then actually it turns out the dog that is up that tree is much bigger than you are, and you shouldn't have barked up that tree.
Yeah. You're not too far off, you know.
Really?
You're not too far off. It refers to hunting dogs.
I was going to say, the big flaw in my thinking is that dogs don't tend to live in trees.
No, but hunting dogs would sometimes chase their prey up a tree. Then the dogs bark, assuming that the prey is still in the tree when the prey is no longer there. So there's continuing to bark at an empty tree when the prey's moved on. So they're now barking up the wrong tree.
But it was the right tree.
It was the right tree originally, perhaps. Yeah, they've just gone to the wrong tree. They've seen it run up a tree and just gone to the wrong tree.
Okay.
Dogs should be very good about tree. Dogs love a good tree.
They do, yes.
Yeah, you can't part a dog in a good tree.
Do you know why? This is completely off the topic, but do you know why dogs cock their legs when they go for a pee?
Is it only the males that cock their legs? Is it just so they don't piss down their own leg?
No, it isn't. It's actually...
Because I've started doing that. As I've got older, and I've started to spray more, then just cocking your leg a little bit just helps with directional flow. It's just something that happens in your mid-40s.
I've not got there yet, but I look forward to that.
I'm not far off the sit-down wee.
I'm happy to be proved wrong on this, but it's my understanding that dogs cock their legs essentially so that they can pee further up whatever... they're peeing on.
Oh, so it's like a pissing up the wall competition.
Well, it's so that whenever another dog comes along and thinks they smell what the scent is, and they think, my God, the scent's all the way up here. The dog that owns this tree must be massive.
But surely dogs have been around long enough and observed dogs cocking their legs long enough to know that the dogs aren't big. They're just cocking their legs to get the height. Surely they would have learned that by now. They're intelligent creatures.
Well, maybe they're not as intelligent as you think, because that's... unless I'm completely wrong, but that was the understanding that the higher the piss, the bigger the dog that done that piss must be. That's a sentence.
Yeah, I bet you didn't think you'd be telling me that sentence at the start of the day.
I did not.
Right. What ones did you get on the list? What have you been looking at?
The first one I looked into this week was the expression catch 22.
Right. Now, catch 22, because that's... now I don't know. Is it to do with the... there's a novel called Catch 22.
That's exactly right.
And I think there was a TV series I recently watched about it, and it's about...
Do we need to explain what Catch 22 is? I feel like listeners should know, but if in case you don't, a Catch 22 is an impossible situation where you can't do anything positive. It's just an impossible problem to solve. You can't do either option. It's a Catch 22 problem.
Yeah. Now, I think in the story, is it in the Second World War?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And he's in the American Air Force, I believe, or he's certainly a pilot. And he basically tries to be seen as mad.
You know this one. I'm impressed.
Yeah, because I recently watched the TV show. And he
is that with George Clooney?
Yes, that's right. George Clooney was in it. And he has to sort of show himself to be mad. And whatever he does is not enough proof that he's mad. And then basically eventually goes mad. Is that right?
Yeah, the idea is that the physician who looked at the soldier or the patient or whoever they were dealing with, they would have all these caveats and rules of, things they could be discharged for and couldn't. And number 22, I assume, on this list of reasons was what he was claiming to do. He wanted to escape the army by reason of insanity. And the physician... reasoned that anybody who was claiming insanity to get out of the army was doing it for their own safety, therefore they can't be insane.
Right, yes.
So how can an insane man wouldn't do the same choice?
Yeah.
That was kind of the argument. And then I assume it was just the 22nd reason on his list of exemptions or exceptions and things. So
right.
It was referred to as Catch 22. An insane man wouldn't look after his own health and safety by leaving the army by insanity, because that would be a sane thing to do.
Yeah, wow, incredible, incredible.
Yeah,
I don't know when that book was, so that's not that old a saying then. That must have been post-Second World War, and
yes,
that's just stuck.
But it's been around forever. It's one of those things you just sort of absorb via osmosis and just say, and I've never really stopped to think. I think a lot of people wrongly think it's something to do with fishing, but it's not.
Another one I've looked at, Ben, is give the cold shoulder.
Now, I have a sauce for this.
Do you? What, a sort of savoury sauce?
although I must admit, I'm not that confident in my answer.
Okay, well, let's just explain. Given the cold shoulder, of course, is sort of you're being unwelcoming or antisocial, or you're ignoring somebody.
Yeah. Now, I think I might know this, but here's my trouble. The sauce I'm going to quote is Carl Pilkington.
Okay, no, he's often quite good at this sort of stuff, though.
They talked about this on their old XFM show years ago, and I think he was quite possibly rightly rollocked by Ricky Gervais for this. But according to Carl Pilkington, the etymology of the phrase the cold shoulder came down to when you had a guest who was staying at your house and, you know, you've been feeding them and homing them and all that sort of thing. And maybe they've started to outstay their welcome somewhat.
Yeah.
So whilst you're serving up the rest of the family, all the nice bits of meat, all the nice hot cuts, they just get a bit of the old cold shoulder cut, the old unwanted, not very nice. Is that true?
That's what I've got, right? So
really?
It's exactly that. In medieval England, this was, apparently, it was customary to give a guest a cold piece of meat from the shoulder of mutton, pork, or beef chop, whatever it was, when the host felt it was time for the guest to leave. It was a polite way of saying, fuck off, basically. You may leave now. So perhaps it was not only a polite way of saying you may leave, perhaps there was like two-way uncertainty about when to leave. If you want to go, but you're feeling it might be rude to get up and go, you wait for the host to give you the cold shoulder. You go, oh, it's all right, I can go now. Or maybe just as the host, you think, yeah, I've had enough of you, I just want you to go. You give them the cold shoulder. They know that that's the deal. You've outstayed your welcome. Time to fuck off.
Yeah, but I mean, it's someone who is so oblivious to social cues that they have missed the fact that it's time to go now. Are they going to really pick up on the fact that they've been given the cold shoulder and know what that means? I doubt it.
But then in medieval England, it might have just that everyone knew it. It was like one of those things that everyone knows. Do you know what I mean?
Maybe. I mean, I think Ricky Gervais, quite rightly, when Carl mentioned this, you know, questioned the logic to this, sort of saying, well, oh, why would you go to this faff? Because then the person would just say, oh, you're giving me the cold shoulder, you want me to leave? Just tell me to leave then. And I thought that was, you know, quite sound logic, but I'm really impressed with Carl Pilkington for coming up with something correct, which he did more often than they gave him credit for.
He did,
you know?
yeah.
And B, that is the correct answer. That's amazing.
Well done, Carl Pilkington. So what's next?
Well, I was very interested by this one because it's bugged me for a while anyway. But the expression, how's your father?
Oh, now a bit of how's your father?
Yeah, because you know what that means.
Yeah, so it means a little bit the other. Again, I don't know why it's called that. So for any
non-English listeners, what does how's your father mean?
Well, it's banging. It's sex, right?
If you'd ask your wife,
why
you
am
fancy
I so prudish
bit,
that I find that?
I don't
that
know. It was very
say.
Around the houses.
I'm using all the other idioms for it.
Yeah. So if you ask the missus, do you want a bit of how's your father? You'd basically be saying, would you like to have sex? But when you think about it, it's extremely odd at the time to, you know, suggest sexy time with the wife.
Yeah.
That you'd be inquiring after the well-being of a dad.
Now, is it anything to do with, you know, there's that sort of thing about girls want to marry their fathers? You know, that sort of thing that always look for a man who's like their father?
Oh, I see what you mean, like some sort of old Freudian type.
Yeah, perhaps it's something to do with that sort of thing.
I actually looked this up, and it turns out it's a bit of a strange one. It goes back to pre-World War I with a guy called Harry Tate, who was like a music hall entertainer. That's music hall. I'm not saying musical weirdly.
Yeah.
Music hall entertainer. And he would often do these sketches as part of his comedy routine. And this was all pre-war stuff. And one of his sort of punchlines of his sketches would be that if he was in a difficult situation and he couldn't explain his way out of it, for example, you there, sir, why are you banging on my door? And he's been caught out, he would dither and then eventually go, how's your father? And it was a sort of catchphrase comedy punchline to get his character out of all sorts of scrapes. That's what his go-to phrase was.
Okay.
And this was then picked up. It was kind of the Catherine Tate, am I bothered, of the day. It was picked up by the soldiers, who then turned it into a sort of dirty euphemism, and it caught on.
Isn't that just typical of men to just find any sort of thing to find as a euphemism?
Yeah, I mean, it's the equivalent of turning a Bruce Forsyth catchphrase into, you know, a euphemism for fucking.
Nice to fuck you.
Oh dear.
Nothing for a pair. Not in this game. If you say it differently, it can be a don't touch the pack. We'll be right back.
I tell you what.
They all take
this
on
is a new
meaning.
Feature. This is a new feature. Dirty Brucey.
Dirty Brucey. Well, I mean, one of his most famous ones would be sort of a post-coital phrase. Did she do well?
I can only imagine. Oh, God, sorry, if you're not English, this might not mean anything to you. And if you're not of a certain age, you know, the old when they illuminate his shadow behind the screen.
Oh, yeah, like his little sort of champion pose.
I wonder what pose Dirty Brucey would be.
Well, doesn't bear thinking about, really, does it?
Sorry, if you're anyone under a certain age, that'll mean nothing to you. Sorry.
Can you imagine him during sex? Me. Higher, higher, lower, lower.
Oh, God, Trent.
You've won the car.
Oh, God, we need to write a sitcom for Dirty Brucey. I love it.
Now, this week I picked up on something that was a bit of a moral dilemma that was doing the rounds on the internet, and I wanted to run this by you because I just wonder whether, because of your job, you might have a different perspective to most people.
Okay, now, do you want me to tell you what I feel should be done, or do you want me to tell you what should be done and then, honest hand on heart, what I would actually do?
I think just tell me your instant response from your gut to start with. Okay. So here's the situation. So a man has been totally slammed by even his own family after he refused to give up his seat on a bus to a pregnant woman. Right?
Okay.
Now he argued, his first argument is, it's not my fault she decided to have a baby.
I respect that level of arseholeness.
Okay.
I must admit, there is a little part of me that thinks, yep.
He says his job involves him being on his feet for the entirety of his 10-hour shifts and that he genuinely cherishes the time sitting down on the bus ride home, knowing he still has a 20-minute walk home from the bus stop, which means more time on my feet. So basically, he said, I don't see why I should give up my seat when I'm knackered. I'm spending my whole days walking. He says, I'm not rude or anything. I just told her, no, I've had a long day and my feet are sore, so I don't want to give up my seat. By the way, she started crying about how pregnant she was and that she was a pregnant single mum. And apparently he said to her, well, I'm sorry, but that's your personal choice and you can't expect other people to accommodate your life choices. Right. So, as a man who spends most of his working life on his feet, I just thought you might have an interesting perspective on this.
I might not have that interesting a perspective. I do have a very firm belief in what was happening. I just want to check with you before I go into this. Was it you probably won't know this, but was it a priority seat? Because there are some seats marked on buses which you are supposed to give up for pregnant ladies and old people.
I can't tell you that. I don't know that.
Okay, so I am someone who will regularly walk 20 plus thousand steps a day with heavy bags on me, carrying them around the streets of East Grinstead. I'm not a hero. I get dressed one leg at a time like everyone else in this world. I do a lot of walking. I'm up on my feet all day. His excuse is that he feels he's had a long day. He should be able to sit down. If you've been on your feet all day and you do it every day, you should be used to it. Get off your ass, son. Give the chair to the lady. And sit down when you get home, you selfish prick. Yeah, he's a knobhead.
Good. Good man. I wondered where you were going to go with that. I was half expecting to say good. I wouldn't have given up my seat. But I think always give up your seat for a pregnant lady, no matter what.
I will just drop in the ever so slight caveat that my inner Larry David really appreciates his logic of, well, I didn't get her pregnant. It's not my fault you're pregnant, woman. However, that being said, That's why we keep our Larry David thoughts inside.
Yeah.
They're inside thoughts. You give up your seat. Don't be a dick.
The interesting thing is how pregnant do you think someone needs to be before you would give up your seat? Because I once saw, it was a really packed train, right? And no one would have really known that this woman was pregnant, I don't think. But, she was standing sort of just, you know, like the train doors, it was just rammed and she was sort of hanging onto the pole. And I could see that she was not going to feel very well. Right. And it was clear that she was not going to make this journey in one piece. And not one person offered her a seat. And the next thing is she's on the floor vomiting everywhere.
Oh, dear God.
And I'm sure that perhaps a seat wouldn't have stopped that. And I'm not saying that anyone necessarily would have perhaps been aware of what was going on. But as someone standing near to her, I just kept thinking, someone needs to give this woman a seat. This isn't going to end well.
Now, I don't believe this policy myself, but there is a risk, isn't there, when doing the nice thing and offering up your seat. We know what we're talking about. There is the risk that you've made a mistake.
My friend's done that.
There is a Jimmy Carr joke. It's not my joke. talking about the same situation, I'd rather see a pregnant woman standing up than a fat girl sitting down crying, which I think is part of the risk. But I mean, even if you make the mistake and you upset someone terribly, I mean, at least your heart was in the right place, I guess.
I think so, right? So another friend of mine who's, he would only say he's a little bit older than me, but he's actually quite a lot older than me, right?
And oh, I know who it is.
So he's now... he's edging 70 now, right?
he really thinks you're a similar age.
And every time I talk to him, he goes, I'm a little bit older than you. It's like, oh, yeah, of course you are, mate. Yeah, you're older than my fucking parents. But yeah, you're a little bit older than I am. So we used to work together. So this is going back probably about 15 years, or maybe even longer than that. But let's say he was in his 50s. Let's be fair and say he was in his 50s. And he came into the office and he was really pissed off. He was like, fucking hell, Trev. And I was like, what? What's happened? He went, fucking this little kid on the bus, little shit, he offered me his seat, right? And I said to him, what's wrong with that? He went, I'm not fucking old. And I went, no, but don't you think it's better that that kid has been brought up in a way that he sees someone who to a kid is an old man? You know, like to my godchildren, I'm an old man. You know what I mean? They see me as an old man. But I just thought, all you needed to say was, no, it's all right, thanks, I'm fine. And why are you getting annoyed about it? Because you're so sensitive about your age, you still lie about it. So you're that sensitive. Don't be sensitive about it. Think that that's a nice thing. Because how many kids are actually sitting on buses, not giving their seats up to elderly people, are having to hold on for dear life onto the handlebars of the bus? Do you know what I mean?
Well, he's lucky he didn't run into this other bloke who's been roasted. He probably thought, you know, well, I'll get years out of these knees before why am I going to give it to you?
I got really pissed off once, right? Really pissed off. So I was with my nan and she would have been in her 80s and we were waiting for a bus and the bus, we were first people at the bus stop. Okay. And then it was a long wait, about half hour for the bus to come. It was winter, so it was cold. And when the bus came, it was quite busy anyway.
Okay.
And you know, not one person at this bus stop had clocked what was going on when they arrived at the bus stop, seen a woman in her 80s and thought, oh, when the bus comes, we'll make sure that person gets on. Everyone just crammed on the bus. The bus was then full. The driver said no more. Me and my nan left at the bus stop. Just like, I was so angry. I just thought, even if I hadn't got on, that's fine. But somebody should have at least said, hang on, let this lady on first. Because when I get to a bus stop, I don't know about you, Ben, but I take in the situation. I think, well, who's here first? Because they're definitely getting on first. And I'll make a point of letting them on first, even if I don't get on the bus. But the whole queuing system seems to have fallen apart in this country. And that seems to be a thing where people just, it's just a ramming situation. system now. You just you don't queue at a bus stop. You just surround the bus stop. And then when the bus comes, you just ram on. And oh, that really fucking pisses me off.
Oh, I completely agree. I'd have been furious. I even to the point, I might be taking this too far, but even if I'm at a self-service checkout and I'm buying like some beer or something, so I need to get approval by the woman with the, you know, key fob or whatever.
Yeah.
If someone else before me, I've noticed they're waiting with a red light on, I will say, right, no, they were first.
Yeah.
And I will redirect them because I think it's an involuntary queue, but we are in another queue now.
Yeah, well, that's it. Yeah. And it's the same at, when you're in a pub, right? And well, there's a memory, but, like when you get to a bar, you clock who's at the bar before you.
Yeah,
so when the barman says who's next, you'll go, oh, he's here for always. I'll always do that. The number of times I've stood at a bar and I've been waiting a long time and then old Mr. fucking Dick walks in, comes straight up to the bar. The bloke says, who's next? He goes, yeah, all right, mate. And I'm of the sort of person who won't say anything. So I just stand there seething, getting more and more angry. And then I'll get back to whoever is waiting for me. And rather than getting cheery Trev turn up with a pint, they get me turning up going, fucking cock at the bar. Fucking arsehole. I mean, I can't bear that.
The problem as well with your nan at the bus stop is basically Britishness, because if you had have said, right, you lot, there's an 80-year-old woman here standing in the rain, she's been here before all of you, let her on.
Yeah.
I guarantee you, your nan would have been the first person on that bus. You'd have created such a sense of great British embarrassment, they would have all been shamed and let her straight on the bus.
Yeah.
However, Britishness is the problem because the old great British sense of let's not cause a fuss overruled that.
Well, really what I had was a bout of the old shyness. They probably would have thought I just had Mad Hatter's disease.
Right, I'll send the butterfly net now.
Well, there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Just before we go, normally do some recommendations here. I must admit, I haven't been watching anything really new this week, but what I have been doing is watching some old stuff again.
Oh, okay.
And I thought what I'd do is I'd recommend this in case you've never seen it, or if it's years since you've seen it, go back and rewatch it. I've started watching All the Crackers from the very start again.
Oh, that's a belter. Absolute belter.
And I haven't watched them probably, I might have seen your episode here and there, but really since they first came out, which I think was 92, the first ones, they're nearly 30 years old. And it's slightly dated, but not much. And I'd forgotten how good, I mean, I knew how good they were, but I'd sort of forgotten really how good he was.
Oh, Robbie Coltrane. He's outstanding.
It's an amazing character. And the interplay between him and the suspect or whoever it is in those interview rooms, it's almost spine-chilling at times.
I'm not going to give away any spoilers, he says, of a 30-year-old TV programme, but especially the episode with a cameo from Robert Carlyle. Oh,
well, I think I've got that coming up. I think that's the first episode of series two that I've only got. I'm almost there.
Robert Carlyle is one of the finest actors this country's produced, as Robbie Coltrane. It's just a delightment. So good.
And it's just, I tell you what, the one thing about that episode that has stuck in my head since I first saw that, and I often find myself doing it on my own, even though I'm not a Liverpool fan, but it's just the way he goes, LIVERPOOL Liverpool FC. LIV. And he's doing it on the bus, I seem to remember.
Yep.
And oh man, that bit has always stuck with me. So yeah, if you've never seen Cracker, just hunt it out, because it is so good and well worth
spending. I think I just called it a delightment, did I?
I think you did call it a delightment.
It's not a word, but I'm sticking with it.
I think it should be a new word that describes Cracker. Cracker is a delightment, Ben Harmer. There's sort of a little critique that can go on the back of the new DVD box set. And of course we had the Oscars, by the way. We should quickly mention the Oscars. Well done to everyone who won. But can I just say, this might be slightly controversial.
Of course.
But the film Nomadland won a lot of Oscars. I think he got Best Actress, Best Director, I think.
Okay.
I watched it. It is dull as fucking ditch water.
Really?
Honestly, it'd been recommended to me, and I thought, my mate had gone on and on about it. He's like, you must watch it, you must watch it. Oh God, I couldn't wait for it to finish. So I must be a complete film philistine. But
do you ever feel? Because that's quite brave of you to admit that. Because when everyone's raving about it, it's winning Oscars. Your friends are recommending it.
Yeah.
And you're the only one who doesn't get it. Do you ever wonder, am I being a bit thick? Is it, am I not getting it?
Or? Well, it's based on a true story. This woman who kind of just travels in a little caravan. It's just nothing really happens in it. You're just sort of like, what is interesting about it? Anyway, but it must just be me.
It must be.
But I can't, basically, I can't recommend an Oscar-winning film. So there we are. Thanks very much for listening and downloading. Don't forget to get in touch with us anytime. We're at Trevor and Ben on Twitter. And we'll catch you again next week. Till then, cuddly toy, cuddly toy. Ooh, cuddly toy. Cuddly toy. Stay safe, stay well. Take it easy.
Bye.